All right, hello and welcome to Sweet Sweet Death. I'm Heather, but this time we're doing things a little differently. Laura, bless her, she overscheduled. So welcome, my husband John. Say hello, John.
Hello, John.
He's an idiot. It was very panicked today when I let you know that Laura was not possibly going to be able to make it. It was either going to be a late night recording or an early morning recording and trying to release it tomorrow. And it was just a little bit of a nightmare. She had her family come into town, very, very busy, couldn't quite make it, went skating yesterday, completely forgot her sister's birthday dinner was tonight. So she let me know that at 8 o'clock this morning. And then it was, I just humored the idea that maybe you would want to jump in and help out. And you begrudgingly agreed.
Now you guys are stuck with me.
Now, yep. I am so sorry. So, all right. Anyway, it's been a crazy week. You today, and I don't know how comfortable you are talking about it, but, you know, I told everyone about how you are no longer a whole man.
I haven't been a whole man in years, but...
True, but now it's technically true, because you have one half of a big toe missing. Well, not missing, it didn't just, disappear one day. It was a very technical medical procedure.
I fell asleep, and I woke up, and it was gone.
Right. Fucking idiot. Oh, my God. This was a mistake. We had talked a little bit about the whole you being in the hospital for a few days, several days, and coming across some interesting folks, particularly Butt Guy. And then I got mixed up that I thought Butt Guy and Complainer, I thought it was a woman that you were talking about that was complaining to the staff, talking all night, arguing with nurses. And it turns out this was the same person that I had confused as two different people. So, yeah, if you want to elaborate on... No, don't take that out of your butt. Or we can just leave it at no, don't take it out of your butt. I don't know if there's much more to expand on that. Well, or if we want to.
It's about 2 a.m. and they're waking me up to do the obligatory, let's wake this guy up every 45 minutes and take his blood pressure and stick him full of holes and steal his blood. And I heard from, I luckily had a private room with which the VA is paying for. That's great.
So far. So far as we know.
And the walls are very thin, and the room next to me was occupied by a gentleman who liked to pretty much argue with the nurses morning, noon, and night. And here it is 2 a.m. Oh, great. This guy is arguing with the nurses. Now, these folks, medical personnel, never raised their voices to me because I complied and cooperated. But we'll call him Butt Guy. Because of this incident, is arguing with them, and I hear the head nurse's voice for that shift come through loud and clear. I told you not to take that out of your butt. Stop taking it out of your butt. I can't hear Butt Guy's responses other than he's just talking back. I can't hear the words he's using. And suddenly, I'm wondering, what? What did they put in his butt that he had to take out? I mean, and I didn't really want to ask because they're not supposed to talk about other patients' procedures. I was also very scared that they might try to give me one.
See, that's different because I would have asked. I'd have been like, hey, what's he taking out of his butt?
They might have given you one.
No, that's not how it works. It's not like a trap. We only give to the people who ask for it.
You don't know that. I don't know what Butt Guy got himself into.
This is going to be akin to the Epstein conspiracy, is when you go to the hospital, if you ask about butt things, do you then receive butt things?
I was very happy that despite of all the other unpleasant things they did to me, there were no butt things done to me.
Woo woo, just toe things.
Just toe things and vein things pressure things.
Veinies, yeah.
Stop medication. I thought my heart was going to explode things, but no butt things. No butt things.
Too bad. Well, it was Halloween, so I spent a lot of last week just putting together last minute costume things for Bennett from Genshin Impact. So she was super pumped. So yeah, just a ton of prop making and stuff, a little back satchel, a little side piece, a belt buckle, like I showed it to Laura last week, but I did a few more things, and she did eventually lose the goggles. I ended up making a leg strap thing like three different times, but it was all good. It was mostly foam and cardboard and paint, a lot of painting. So I remember I was just covered in paint. Like, I've only got really one good, nice pair of jeans, and I got paint on them. So I went a little hardcore. And then we did give away every single last piece of candy. Not that we had a lot of kids, but I would ask, sorry, damn it, if you were Laura, I'd be like, how many kids came to your house? But we live at the same house, so that's a useless question.
Yeah, I think maybe we got roundabout, count all the heads, about a dozen.
I was thinking around 15.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's pretty on the nose. But I was giving kids like big handfuls, and then I felt really bad. The last four kids that came by, I gave each like one piece of candy. I was like, I'm so sorry. Except for one kid, I was like, you get two pieces of candy, because I would have only had one left, and it was like, just take it. And then I was disappointed in our child for bringing home so little candy. Have we not raised her? I really thought...
It's not even going to last until Thanksgiving, let alone Easter.
No, there's like two pieces of candy left. Like, that's it.
There were two pieces of candy left.
I see some evidence on the table of some gutted candy wrappers.
You see nothing?
I see nothing. Nope. I will not rat you out that you ate the last two pieces of candy.
Yeah, don't tell Heather that I ate the last two pieces of candy.
I do. I haven't seen it in a while, but I don't know if you... Are you familiar with the Jimmy Kimmel... tradition of telling kids that they ate all their Halloween candy the night before and just watching the children melt down? Have you ever seen these videos?
I've seen the videos. I mean, it was actually perpetrated as a crime even back in the days of yore, before the earth cooled, when I was a child, that can be believed. Certain similar frauds were perpetrated upon children going way back before Jimmy.
Well, true, but I mean, this time it's filmed and put on the internet, so it's totally different, man.
Oh, it looks, it is deep with pathos. Bathos sure and pathos, as the Greeks would say.
Yeah. But, fuck them kids. So, no. But I haven't had too much candy. You know, I'm trying to do low-carb stuff, which is really depressing around the holidays, which means I'll probably cheat quite a bit and then live in regret, like I do. I think it's the Irish in me that really gets excited about turmoil and...
The guilt.
The guilt.
You could have been a Catholic. You realize that.
Well, because my grandma, my very strict grandmother from Puerto Rico, is hardcore Catholic. So I do think that did trickle down. Like, I do think that Catholic guilt that my mother grew up with has also translated onto us. Because my grandma, we spent a lot of weekends over at her house as kids. I love her. She's nuts, though. But, like, she would call us little, like, if we were the good ones, she'd call us the angel. And then the other two were the little demons. You guys were the little devils.
I have to admit, I've known many different flavors of Catholicism. I've known the Caribbean Catholicism, the Mexican Catholicism, the Polish Catholicism, and Italian Catholicism. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, hands down, the Irish have perfected the guilt of the Catholic into a weapon.
They sure have. I've read Angela's Ashes. That is like one Catholic guilt trip, is that fucking book of his childhood. Guilt.
The guilt is tangible. It's a physical presence. It looks like cinders and dust and despair. And it's everywhere.
Not anymore. There have been some years where they actually got categorized, like they did World Health studies, mental health studies, and they found the Irish to be the happiest group of people for like a few years, I think.
That was the whiskey.
Well, no, this was like 2007, man. this was not 1880s, bro.
Well, I mean, I think it's still the whiskey had a lot to do with it, because it sure makes me happy.
I mean, you've got a nice little glass there, a little bit of, I don't know, single malt. I don't know what you've got. Single malt
Irish whiskey.
That's right. I said it, but I didn't know what it meant. And I don't care what it means. You don't have to tell me.
And it's sweeter than the tears of the angel it is.
Oh my God. Fucking kill me. That would be awesome. What kind of heaven where angels cry tears of whiskey? Is that real?
I hope so. Boy, you know, that would do a lot better just sitting around on clouds twanging on harps, man.
Right? Worshiping the Lord. Cry whiskey, man.
Let's get out here and make that angel cry. You guys got your glasses, right?
And your book of insults.
Stick my nails in.
Yep. Oh, shit. I was listening to some Kevin and Bean, actually. So that kind of reminds me of, like, this story of Bean talking about his personal Lord and Savior. So the subject of the caller topic was, you vouched for bad people. And so this guy that they had interviewed, and again, debunked, or, you know, long and gone, rip Kevin and Bean in L.A. But, like, they were talking about this guy who had a... He had, like, these 13 huge, or I don't know, if it was, I think it was more than 13, like, these huge satellites, and he could get channels from all over the world, and Bean is, like, obsessed with TV, so he was, like, really impressed with this guy, but this dude was so old, they tried to interview him, he would wander off while they were interviewing him, looking for paperwork and stuff to tell them facts, and it was, like, a terrible interview. Anyway, so Bean goes out somewhere nearby, I think in another state, and goes... Well, that guy's only 250 miles away. I should go visit him. So he goes an extra 250 miles from where he was, somewhere on the East Coast or something, just to visit this man who had dozens of TV satellites so that they could sit and watch. He took him out to lunch. The paper apparently was like, ooh, a Hollywood type is here. So they like went and interviewed him, I guess. And he was like... Earl is my personal Lord and Savior. Like, he doesn't have a wife telling him what to do. He gets to watch TV all day. Like, bless this man. Like, he really, of course, being like Bean and just trumping it up, you know. And then some time goes by and Bean goes, you know, whatever happened to that guy? We should check in on that guy. How's that guy doing? And he looks him up and he had been arrested for obtaining an insane amount of child pornography in his garage. And wow. He was like, I'm on the internet for perpetuity saying that this man is my personal Lord and Savior, the kiddie porn guy. And that he was known, and I need to look the story up because it might have just been a rumor at the time, but like something about he also gave away free ice cream to the neighborhood children, and it may have contained substances.
Like roofie?
No, that would have been a blessing. Other personal bodily fluids biological that may components. Have made it into the ice cream that he was giving to people. He was a bad, bad man.
Kind of like the lobster bisque in Fight Club.
Yes, I think precisely. What did Kevin say? He was like, more cream than ice.
Oh, ba-dum-bum-psh.
So there was that. Oh my God. So I don't know that I've ever vouched for anybody that bad. I don't know, but you hear all kinds of stories, right? Like an old boss, Tony, he went to college with a dude who ended up like murdering his wife, you know? So like stuff like that, you ever know anybody that ended up being way worse than you ever thought they could have been?
Rumor had it that when I served in Germany, United States Army, there was a sergeant, squad leader, who was a really personable guy, had a wife, two kids, everybody liked him. He was a good soldier, good at what he did, was a good leader, and he went in for his five-year mandatory security clearance investigation. We all had security clearances, and every 5 years, you got to go get reinvestigated to see, you know, if you've done anything naughty, and then at the end of the interview with the CID agents, they go, is there anything that you'd like to talk about? You know, this either happened in the past 5 years or something you didn't cover in your initial clearance interview. And most people are like, I got a couple speeding tickets, maybe, you know, or nothing to report. And this guy said, I murdered a school bus full of Girl Scouts in Arizona in 1970, whatever.
Yeah.
They were like, and, you know, I can only imagine the CID agents sitting on the other side of the table like, bleak, 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 like, could you say that again, please?
Yeah.
Saying it all after call sign, as we used to say in the Army. And I don't know the veracity of the entire story. This was the tale that was told to me third hand through my contacts in CID, meaning these are the guys I drank with at the bar.
Yeah.
But Sergeant, whose name will not be mentioned here, never came back. And his wife and kids went back to the United States and nobody said anything about it.
Interesting. No Have orders? You ever tried to look up, like, Arizona Girl Scouts murder or anything like that?
You know, I haven't.
Because now I because, want to.
Because I assume it's just, you know, apocryphal. I assume it's an anecdote, but,
maybe,
you know.
Maybe he was just crazy and made it up?
They generally, they may have down-flagged you for a security clearance thing, but if you just made it up, they're just going to mark you up to, okay, you're no longer suitable to have a top secret security clearance, but they wouldn't necessarily disappear you.
Yeah.
But we heard of no other crimes in the community. We heard of no other, just a tight-knit community when you live on a military base in Europe.
Yeah.
All the Americans know everybody, everybody's wives know everybody else, and nobody had anything to say that anything had happened. Guy wasn't smacking his kids around. He didn't steal a car, wasn't found downtown drunk. He just went in for his security interview and did not come back out again.
Fuck. Be like, oh, tough questions. No.
And it had happened a couple other times, like a kid was bringing, this is back in the days of floppy disks, computer games.
Yeah.
And he was bringing in floppy disks with the connivance of one of the guards, getting them into the secure facility and then playing these video games, which he had gotten on the German market on the computers inside our secure information facility.
Oh.
They made him disappear.
Yeah.
I was the guy that got the lock his wall locker up. And,
oh, shit.
Because and they just basically, they dragged him out. Not dragged, but he got into the back of a car with a couple of plainclothes guys, one of which I know for certain was an FBI agent and was never seen or heard from again. About 30 days, orders came down to ship his personal belongings to X. And I was the one that had to give the inventory sheet saying, okay, nothing's been tampered with.
Yeah.
I counted everything. I sealed it. Most of his money's in there. You know, kind of stuff. None of the beer made it. But
yeah.
And that was that. And because, again, rumor had it, my clandestine source drinking at the bar said that computer virus made, those were pretty popular back then, made by a German terrorist organization had climbed off of one of the disks he'd smuggled into the secure information facility and popped up on the servers in Vint Hill Farms, Maryland, which is Defense Intelligence Agency headquarters.
Oh, shit.
And they were able to trace it back to whence it came. And so they came to talk with, well, it's military slang for abduct or arrest, this young gentleman, and poof, he's gone.
Also, you could play Tetris. You know, or whatever. I don't know what games were on floppy disks.
And his friend, the friend who is the sergeant who was helping him smuggle this stuff in, became a privatee too, and got posted to Korea.
Oh, okay.
Because you were never, ever, ever, ever supposed to let anybody go inside the information facility with any kind of extraneous cassette tape, computer floppy disk, anything.
That's a pretty big risk for just a game. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Just because a kid has security clearance doesn't mean he's all that bright. I mean, he was an analyst.
Yeah.
So be careful, kids.
I feel like if I were in the Army, I mean, not that I would ever get intelligence or security clearance, I would have probably let a friend... Come on, man. Okay. I feel like I would have been easily persuaded. For sure.
I mean, after that, I couldn't even get into this skiff. I had a, if you forgot your badge, even though it's like, okay, he's an MP. I drink with this guy. He's like, I'm sorry, Corporal. I can't let you into the skiff.
Yeah.
Like, dude, it's me.
Yeah.
We were sitting together at the bar playing darts last night.
Yeah.
You know who I am. Here's my ID card. No, you need your badge. It's like, the barracks is like 300 meters away. I'm going to go all the way back to the barracks, get my badge and come back here. He's like, that's correct. Like, seriously, man? He's seriously. So all the way back.
Hey, man, he was just doing his job.
But, you know, that's how serious it became. And these guys are armed. They have live ammunition for their pistols. And there's always a cat wandering around with a rifle who's got live ammunition in it.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you guys have the bullets today. I will do what you ask.
Oh, my God. Sorry. Speaking of bullets and, like, all this crazy. Now, granted, this is Facebook, so But, like, you know, the whole Alec Baldwin thing, everybody is blaming Alec Baldwin, which is pretty nuts. Like, it blows my mind, like, how many people are saying that it's his fault. And it's like, but he's, like, an actor. He's not a gun expert. Like, he doesn't know from bullets, I'm assuming. And one guy was bringing up, like, Keanu Reeves always checks his guns. And it's like, well, A, he's done a lot of movies with a lot of guns. You know, Alec Baldwin, you know, my favorite show of all time is 30 Rock, in which he starred in with Tina Fey. Like, he's a comedic actor. He's done some action things. But, like, he's not, like, doing a ton of action movies where he's regularly around guns and probably knows what to look for. Again, he's assuming it went through steps, and it's just, I don't know, it's pretty bananas for people to blame him.
One of the things I find deficient in this country is that we're a nation of gun owners. There's 700 million guns in this country, and I think however you feel or however your parents feel about guns, there should at least be a block of instruction in school. If you find a gun, here's what you do. Or if someone tries to hand you a gun, here's what you do.
Oh, no, we got that in elementary school. Like, we got videos, like, safety videos of if you ever find a gun, never touch it. Yeah, like, go find someone. But, like, because too many times where a kid finds a gun, pretends to jump out from behind the bushes to scare his friends, and then, like, actually shoots a kid, you know, by accident. Like, and that was their big fear, like, just never touch guns.
Well, my point is, like, this is a guy, anybody in the acting field, you may be on a set where there's hot weapons, and it's not just the actors. I think everybody, if there's weapons, even fake weapons around, I think you gotta sit everybody down and give them a safety briefing and give them the same talk that I got from my stepdad when I was 9 years old. It's like, don't ever point this thing at anybody. If someone tells you it's not loaded, assume it is. Learn how to check. Yeah. Always keep it pointed in a safe direction. Just the little basic safety tips that you could have in a safety briefing at the beginning of the shooting day.
And that's true. But I mean, in foresight, sure, like, it makes sense. Why didn't he check it? You know, it would have been such a quick little check. Would he have known? You're right. I mean, if they had had a meeting. But again, when someone hands you a gun and says cold gun, in your mind, like, it's done. It's been checked. Like,
yeah, in my mind, I check it because that's true. Culture I grew up in.
True. But okay, not just the culture. You in the army. You were in artillery. Well, this you is know, before you worked the with army. Weapons. Okay.
Anybody handed me a weapon, a rifle, a pistol, a shotgun, anything
Alec
like that?
Alec Baldwin grew up in Boston. How many things do you think he was out shooting? You know, I mean, it's...
Sure, but they could have had it. I bet you know, maybe they'll start doing the little safety briefing.
They're going to have to. I mean, yeah, in retrospect, he could have. Again, if it was me and I wasn't sure and rules hadn't been laid out and someone handed me and said cold gun, I would assume that was it. Moving on.
You can fill cemeteries up with the number of people who've been killed with unloaded weapons.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so.
Anyway, not to get too political. All right. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Because it's only one story, I was a little nervous about starting too soon, but fuck it. Let's just do it. So we're covering Utah. John doesn't really have a story again. This is all very last minute, but you've got some pretty funny stories. We'll do them after just, you know, to make sure. This one's actually pretty long, so, and I'm sure you've got plenty to say about the Mormons as well. So not just in general. Sorry, to clarify, not just that he has things to say about Mormons all the time, just that this story is about Mormons and you might have things to say about Mormons. That's what I'm getting at. Okay.
Mormons maybe joined the army.
Oh my God, that's true. Dude, fucking, it's a conspiracy. I worked for Mormons. Oh my God, Laura dated a guy that used to be Mormon. Holy shit. No. Okay, so I'm going to do the Mountain Meadows Massacre it's Mountain Meadows. Sorry. So the Mountain Meadows Massacre, it happened back in 1857. This is a super controversial story, even, you know, from obviously the second it happened, because this was basically a bunch of Mormons that killed a bunch of people, and they tried to hide it for a long time, decades, and they finally started recognizing it, I think, early 2000s or even before that? It was a long time. Like, over 100 years, probably.
Yeah, you started hearing about it in the 1990s.
That maybe it wasn't.
Inner circles of the church had always known about, and certain Mormon historians had always known about it, but it kind of broke back out into the public eye in the late 1990s.
Okay, yeah. All right. So in the summer of 1857, the Baker-Fancher Party left Arkansas to cross the U.S. territories for a better and brighter future in California. In addition to the 40 wagons they were bringing, were somewhere between 120 to 150 men, women, and children, 900 heads of livestock, and currency, they say, worth around $100,000 between everybody. So out of this group, only 17 children would survive. So to begin with, people didn't like Mormons. I think it's important to remember a lot of the Christians in this country were descendants from pilgrims. So you've already got a pretty strict, tight, rule settings. Ideology needs to be the same as them. So the Mormon Church was founded by Joseph Smith in New York in the 1830s. He claimed to be a modern day prophet, which was strike one with the pilgrims, that he was the only one who could read the magic tablets after he was visited by an angel, strike two for the pilgrims, and that he was really into polygamy. So that was like a huge strike number three, obviously. people hated him so much that they murdered Joseph Smith via hanging by angry mob. And this was after they were chased out of New York and Missouri. And because people didn't like them there either. So just remember that anyone that wasn't Mormon hated Mormons, including the U.S. government. So they were all a little paranoid. And in order to get away from the threats and harassment, Brigham Young, who was Smith's successor, dragged 1,600 of his members through frozen landscapes into the still Mexican-controlled territory, landing near the Great Salt Lake. I don't envy that walk. I don't want to think about traveling from Illinois to Utah via horse.
Well, a lot of the local people, when they departed Missouri, would not sell them horses or oxen or anything to pull their wagons. So a lot of them just pushed wheelbarrows 1,600 miles down a land with no roads.
That is fucking insane. See, this guy is a fucking encyclopedia who can just grab anything out of anywhere and then just talk about it. All right, so there will be more exciting facts like that because I need to know more about Mormons pushing fucking wheelbarrows, and I mean that. So this did begin the habit of Mormons kind of being known for stockpiling their supplies due to fears of being kicked out and having to relocate quickly. In the summer of 1857, they talked about like these parades. Okay, so it said there were parades through Cedar City with banners reading "A Terror to Evildoers," and I don't know what that means, but I don't know. I think they're talking about people that are not Mormon.
The Gentiles.
Yeah, I guess. Is that what they call people that are not Mormon?
Correct.
Oh, that is so lame. Okay, anyway. Young was even beginning to speak violently about outsiders and wanting restitution for all the spilled Mormon blood. So now it's starting to become like this really personal thing with just not liking anybody that wasn't Mormon. So sorry, I did skip ahead a little bit. But among the people that traveled to the promised land was John D. Lee, the only man that would end up being prosecuted for everything that happened. In 1847, when Mexico ceded its territories, the Mormons' butthole slammed shut because they thought for sure that the U.S. Army was going to show up, fuck with them, and steal their women, which apparently the Army did kind of on the regular. It said that they would just come by and like, not trick women, but like just get them to leave the Mormon church, and probably because their lives fucking sucked. So they were like, yeah, fuck this shit. So to ease tensions, our 13th president, Millard Fillmore, and I wrote because I assumed it was going to be Laura I was talking to. Did you know we had a president named Millard Fillmore? And I know her answer would have been no. But because you're you, I know that your answer is yes. Of course you knew that there was a president named Millard Fillmore.
What do you think Fillmore Boulevard was named after?
I don't... Who the fuck knows? Why is this called a table? I don't know, John.
It's next to all the other streets named after presidents in that end of town.
Is it?
Yeah, Washington, Jefferson, Jackson. Yeah, all those cats have names on the north end of Colorado Springs and Fillmore. Here's number 13.
I mean, those are subtle clues, but I don't think the average person would be able to piece that together, John.
Sigh.
I think I just work at such a high level of intelligence that my brain was processing other things that were more important than the fact that it was all President Street names. I just don't want to seem like an idiot that I didn't realize that. So anyway, to everyone's shock that I've ever talked to, we had a president named Millard Fillmore, and he made Brigham Young governor of the Utah Territory and the superintendent of Indian Affairs. So, of course, non-Mormons were pretty displeased with the choice, as you can imagine, because they were evil fucking heathens. And it said in April of earlier that year before the massacre, there was something that like really kind of like ruffled on the Mormons' feathers because they were like, we knew it. They're out for us. A man named Parley P. Pratt was killed. And that's a real name, Parley P. Pratt. I picture a headstone at Hogwarts that says Parley P. Pratt. So anyway, the whole story was a little confusing. Something about he married an already married woman, and then the guy that she was married to killed him, basically. And no one really gave a shit because he was a Mormon. So, you know, Mormons are super pissed. You know, they're Brigham Young's getting them all worked up, you know, riled up. And I saw some of his speeches, and they're like, they're pretty fucking hateful, man. Like, he was not like this peaceful church leader that, you know, the love of God. Like, he was kind of fire brimstone motherfucker. In addition to being told to save their grain, the Mormons were also told to get their guns in working order and stockpile ammunition. They were encouraged to make alliances with local Indians. And amidst all this chaos, Brigham Young, who was doing his best to keep a clear head, declared martial law and didn't want anyone coming through Utah or selling any supplies to non-Mormons. And he didn't really have that kind of authority. And a lot of people, they're moving through the territories. Like, they're not getting a tweet saying, like, you're not allowed in here. So people are just kind of coming through anyway. No one really gives a shit. So here comes the Baker Fancher group. They're having a jolly time. They're staving off infection and hunger and shit. They're so close to California. And they really were caught off guard between the tension between the Mormons and the non-Mormons. The only place they were really able to stock up on was in Salt Lake City. So by the time they reached Cedar City, that wasn't too far from the border, they were really desperate for supplies and gear, and the Mormons were not selling to them. And it seems like everybody was just kind of huge dicks to each other. And things got really heated because, again, like the Christian immigrants coming through were like super desperate for supplies. Like, they know they're running low, and there's nowhere really they're going to be able to stop in between where they're going to get shit. So they're a little worried. So tensions start rising, and then some of the men in the group start taunting the Mormons, saying like, we were a part of the mob that killed Joseph Smith. And like, I think they said one guy waved the gun and was like, I shot him with this gun. So like, you know, it's brilliant. Just this total like dick measuring contest. But again, they're like, they need shit, and the Mormons are being fucking assholes about it. So the mayor of Cedar City, and this is after I think the immigrants, they've already started down the path. They're like, all right, fuck this joint. So they're going down. The Cedar City mayor, Isaac Haight, H-A-I-G-H-T.
Haight.
Okay, Haight. He wanted to pursue them with the militia and requested that the militia commander send them out. That man, William Dame, was like, slow your roll, buddy. And he basically told him in so many words, like, sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you. Like, he had to kind of say that to another grown man. Like, just, you need to just let them go. Like, they're just being assholes. Just, you know, they're going to go away. Don't worry about it. Isaac Haight did not like that answer, so he reached out to the local Paiute Indians, and he started feeding them lies. He started telling them that the immigrants were out to hurt them, that they were going to poison their water and make them all sick, and they were told that if they helped, they could keep, like, most of the travelers' stuff. So the Paiutes weren't really known for attacking people, but they did agree, even though they were dubious, and that's what they say. So, like, the Paiutes still today claim, like, we absolutely had nothing to do with that. Like, it was all Mormons. And the Mormons are like, no way, they helped. So I guess we'll never really know. It also wouldn't shock me, I don't know, if you were an Indian in 1857 and they were like, hey, you want to help us kill a bunch of white people? Like, wouldn't you, though?
I mean, with the relationship that most Native American tribes have had with the white man in the past 300 years up until that point, kill us some pale faces.
Right, like, wouldn't you? Like, I don't know. I would. I'd be like, fuck yeah, man, I'm in. Anyway, so, but they claim, like, no, we're peaceful. We were not a part of that. So that's what they're sticking to.
And witnesses are thin on the ground anymore.
And the only people claiming that they did it were the people that killed this group that were participated. So, you know, it would not shock me either way. Oh, and then, like, they kind of figured, like, oh, if we get the Paiutes in on this, then we can just completely and totally blame the Paiutes. Like, we can pretend like we had nothing to do with it, that they just came after these poor people and just took all their shit.
They'll be the patsies.
Right, they'll be the patsies. So on September 6th, Haidt approached the local church leaders about their devious plans, and it says, there's a couple different sites that said a couple different things. One said, like, most people were not into it. They were like, no way, this is awful. Like, we can't do this. Another site was like, everybody was like, hell yeah, man, we're on board. And then, like, another site, like, in between the two. So anyway, I like to think that most people said, like, this is a really bad idea, don't do this. So to humor the men, the council leaders told Haidt that they would send a letter to Brigham Young and see what he had to say, which is apparently, like, a 500-mile round trip. So, like, tensions are, like, it's ready to boil over, and they're like, well, all right, we'll send a 500-mile letter round trip by, you know, horseback. But John D. Lee, so he was also involved in all of this planning. Because he was also, like, the local, I think, like, leader of Indian affairs, like, or, like, in his local region. All right. And then John D. Lee, who was also a part of this planning, he could not wait. So I put, he was like a dog being told not to eat a treat that was balanced on its nose. And originally they had planned to attack in the Santa Clara Canyon, but ended up attacking at Mountain Meadows instead. Apparently the Baker Fancher party did a pretty good job defending themselves because they were able to force a retreat out of their attackers, and it allowed the groups to pull all their wagons in a circle and hole up. There were two more attacks in the five-day siege, and I'm not really sure how this happened, but it said that a couple of immigrants from the party were a few miles from the corral, and that two Cedar City men saw them and killed one, but the other one got away and was able to, like, retreat back to, like, the corral or whatever, and he reported back, like, oh, it's white guys that shot me, it wasn't Indians. So they were kind of, now they're, like, extra paranoid, like, oh no, they're gonna find out that it was us that killed them. Like, word's gonna get out. Like, if now they know, like, if word does get out that they were a part of it, like, it's over for the Mormons. So now they're in fuck, like, complete and total panic mode. So the Mormons knew that the army was already on its way. Like, I think Brigham knew, Young knew that the army was on its way just to, like, handle things again, because it's Mormons out there. What are they doing? We need to make sure we're on top of that. But I mean, I think they had a point. Army's on its way, and they're worried about religious persecution and the watchful eye of the government. I know, right? I wonder why. Oh, did I put? Yeah, it was September 6th. Was that initial first day. And then on September 9th, Haidt met with Dame, the militia commander that had told him to slow his roll. And he begged for the use of the militiamen again. And Dame said he wanted to use the militiamen to actually help them get safely out of California because he knew of the rising tensions. Haidt got Dame alone and told him the truth, because at this point, no one really knows that this is happening yet. He's like, oh, by the way, like, we are 3 days into the attack already, and they probably know it was white people and not Indians. So he's, like, breaking this news. Like, it goes from, yeah, we're going to use the militia to help, to, ah, fuck, what?
You did what?
Like, you did what now? You stupid fuck. Like, we could have had this under control. So anyway, now Dame knows, like, this is bad, so he's willing to make that sacrifice, and it goes from protect them to, okay, we need to eliminate them, like, we need to make sure that they don't get out.
Kill the witnesses.
It's literally kill the witnesses.
It's turned an act of piracy into an existential threat for the Mormon church.
Oh yeah, this is what I put. Dame gave the command to leave no witnesses. And the emigrants were to be decoyed out and destroyed with the exception of the small children who weren't old enough, they hoped, to remember anything.
Oh boy.
Right? So now they've got the power of the militia. They could do the Lord's work and murder everybody. So on September 11th, John D. Lee and the militia approached the group with a white flag offering a truce that they were there to escort them safely back to Cedar City. And they were told to leave all of their belongings for the Paiutes to make sure that they didn't chase them. Like, oh, no, all they want is your stuff. Don't worry, we're here to, like, bring you to safety.
Leave all the cash.
Yeah, and apparently, like, it said, and again, I don't know, like, what this is based on, but, like, they said that they were hesitant. Like, do we really want to go out there? Is it a trick? Like, what's happening? Because now they're freaked out. But they're like, well, we don't really have any, like, food left. We're out of supplies. We have no more ammunition. This is, like, really, literally the only choice we have is to go with these guys. But they're white guys. They're in uniform. They can't be full of shit. So, like, they're kind of happy, too. Like, okay, this is over. Because, yeah, it's nice official white people. So the first group that left were the wounded and the youngest children. And I think it said the second group were women and children on foot. And the men were, like, the last to leave. So the grown men and the young, like, mostly grown boys. And about a mile from the attack site, at a prearranged signal, the militiamen turned and shot the immigrants. And it said the Paiutes all came out of hiding. Again, this is, like, based on what the Mormons said, that the Paiutes came out of hiding and they shot arrows at the men and women. And that all the men that were there at the original site that hadn't left yet were shot at point blank range. So yeah, they had planned to pin it on the Paiutes, but those involved admitted that most of the killing was done by the Mormons. So this is what sucks. It says that Brigham Young did eventually write back that just leave them alone. You know, don't just let them go. They're harmless. They're fine. But again, this is, like, I think it was the day after they got the letter to say to leave them alone. But it's like, yeah, of course, it's, like, way too late. So it said that some 120 people were killed, 17 children, and again, none over the age of 7 survived. At first, local families adopted the leftover children, but government officials were like, nope, and returned the children back to their families, to members in Arkansas. And I think they said it was only 15 out of 17 children that got returned to their families. And, like, some of the, what was it? Okay, so I don't know how accurate this is because, okay, it was the LA Times. Not that that's, like, a tabloid or anything, but this was the only place I saw that it was written, like, some of the personal accounts of the kids talking about, like, what they saw. But again, I don't know, because this is the only place I found this. Okay, before, like, so after the initial attack, but they're still, like, holed up in their little corral, they tried to appeal to their settlers by sending out two adorable little girls, but they were both shot dead. I don't know in what regards, like, what exactly the little girls were supposed to do, but it said they sent two little girls out. Again, I don't know what for, but they were shot. After the settlers surrendered, two teenage sisters begged for Lee to make them his wives so that they didn't get shot. Instead, they were stripped naked, raped, and murdered. And then it says, some of the children that had been spared and placed with new families recalled these people wearing some of their new, like, their parents' items. So, like, they'd see, like, their dead mother's jewelry being worn on some bitch that they didn't know. It said two children, Rebecca Dunlap and Louisa Dunlap, were the first to witness Mormons wash their war paint off. And they noticed that they were white guys and definitely not Indians. And then that little girl, Rebecca, said that she recalled a little boy that was crying because he was shot in the leg. So he was really uncomfortable and unable to stand the noise any longer. One got out, took the little boy by the feet, and knocked his brains against the wagon. Yes, I don't.
Quite biblical, that
it's,
one.
Yeah, really bad. Yeah. So again, that was from one article, but I didn't see it in any of the other stuff that I read. So yeah, let's see. And it says that the killers all made a pledge to stand together, not rat each other out, to maintain that it was the Paiute Indians. And I think it really kind of blew my mind that, like, John D. Lee, hang on, let me find it. Oh, well, you know what? Let me just do this. So after the slaughter, Lee still insisted it was the Paiutes alone who committed the crimes. It says that the victims were buried really quickly, obviously, to, like, try to hide everything that they could. And it says that the locals auctioned off or distributed most of their possessions. Over the next 2 years, more information revealed itself about the true nature of the attacks, and in 1870, both Isaac and John D. Lee were excommunicated from the church. And finally, in 1874, a territorial grand jury indicted 9 men for the roles they played, but only Lee was convicted. The first trial ended in mistrial, but in 1877, Lee was convicted and sentenced to death by firing squad. And Lee felt like he was a scapegoat, but I still don't really feel bad for him. That motherfucker had 19 wives, dude. John D. Lee. Holy hell. It can't be that good. Right? It can't be that good to handle living with 18 other women that are also having sex with your husband. It can't be worth it.
Apparently, you know, you got judged in the community by how many women you could support, so it might have been a status thing. But yeah, probably not pleasant. I mean, did they keep them in barracks or...
I don't know. Probably just out in huts when like half of them are on their lady time, you know?
Oh, man.
And apparently he had a lot of time on his hands, between the massacre and his sentencing, because that motherfucker wrote a 400-page book about his life and Mormonism and how he was the scapegoat and like how nothing was his fault and everything was Brigham Young's fault. So here's a quote. It said, "I did everything in my power to save that people, but I am the one that must suffer." So yeah, just whine, whine, whine. Whatever. They're going to shoot me. But it's like, man, you backed up. You had, and I know it wasn't just him alone. It was a lot of people involved that, you know, one man doesn't kill 120 people. But like, you were okay with that. You were okay with blaming it on people who had nothing to do with it. You know what I mean? Like, you're not a good person and don't act like you're innocent in all of this. Like, because other people aren't getting in trouble, you shouldn't get in trouble, right? Like, cops always say that when you write you a ticket, when you're like, "But everybody else was going 40 miles an hour, sir." He'll be like, "That's no excuse." So, you know what I mean?
Nuremberg defense.
Right. That's what I was going to say. So this was so crazy. 300 people showed up to the massacre site to watch him get executed, because I guess they dragged his ass out there to have him executed. A photographer was there. And Lee asked that whatever photograph got made, and that I think they could only take one photograph, like at an event, literally, that whatever photograph got made be given to his wives, which is like weird. Why would you want that? Why would you want your wives to have that fucking picture of you about ready to get shot? It's fucking insane.
Show all the kids, and the kids can stay irritated about it and keep the hate going.
Okay. I guess I didn't think about that like in a manipulative type of way, you know.
If you got 19 wives, you're going to be a manipulative type.
Probably, right? And yeah, anyway, hang on. I'll get into polygamy in a second. But anyway, and I was thinking how funny too, like thinking of like the Sunday paper, looking under the events page and seeing like execution, high noon, Mountain Meadows, like, and then just 300 people show up. I mean, isn't that insane?
Well, it was, you know, TV reception was poor back then.
I guess so.
And it's free.
And it's free. It's free television in real life. Man, television in real life, what a trip. I can't even imagine. But, so yeah, anyway, 300 people showed up. And it said that he shook the hands of all the men around him, removed his coat and hat, and faced the five-man firing squad. And he said the best line ever. He said, "Let them shoot the balls through my heart," which I thought was hilarious. I wrote, "Ha!" And then he also said, "Don't let them mangle my body," which is less funny. But they shot him, and it said that Lee fell back into his coffin. In 1961, the church reinstated John D. Lee back into the church, which I'm sure he really would have appreciated if it weren't for the fact that he were dead. But yeah, and like I said, they've tried to pretend like they didn't have a part in it for a long time. It's kind of, they acknowledge it. They've got, you know, a web page dedicated to it, I think. They address it, you know, they don't want to hide it anymore, which is, you know, commendable, I guess.
I mean, the statute of limitations has run out. Anybody involved is dead 100 years ago.
Whose history doesn't have blood on its hands? You know, like every religious group, every political group, every family, you know, everybody has their dark little secrets or things that they're ashamed of. It's just a part of life. But I did put, if you don't want people to hate your religion, don't murder 120 men, women, and children. Oh, it said too, someone tried to put up a monument to the victims 2 years after the massacre, and Brigham Young himself tore it down. That he did not want it there. Again.
That's not surprising.
Not surprising. Brigham Young, I'm sorry, man, if you're a Mormon, but Brigham Young seemed like a fucking dick. Anyways, so that's that. And then to bring up, sorry, just because I think I should, polygamy. I don't understand what the big deal is. I don't think we should care if a man wants to have two wives or if a girl wants to have two husbands. Like, as long as everything is consenting, right? Everybody is consenting. It's nothing was arranged. These are individuals that have all agreed on the terms and are completely fine with the arrangements they have.
12-year-olds.
Everybody is, maybe even for polygamy, fuck it. Make the age 21 and over. Just give that little extra cushion for some dumb 18-year-old to not get into something they're not ready for. But I would agree. I would say that for just regular marriage as well. Like, I don't think you should be married at 18, dude. Well, because at the cake shop, fuck, man, you weren't there for it. Because there was a couple, like, the parents who dragged these kids in, they had to have been, I don't think they had graduated high school yet, dude. The parents had dragged these two kids in, and they were having them do a wedding cake tasting, and they were both on the phones, and neither could have given a shit about what was happening.
And it was like, mom and dad catch them boinking, or?
I don't know. I don't know if the girl was pregnant. I don't know if they were like, no, we're in love. And then, like, they were like, okay, let's do it. It was like bananas. I just remember going, like, I'm sorry to say it, there is no way those kids are still together. No. And it's been a few years, but it's like, there is no way. It made me actually uncomfortable that they were even there. But I mean, who the fuck am I? I'm just here to sell you a cake, I'm not here to question your business. I mean, hey, I've made a few dick cakes. I've made boob cakes. There is no judgment. Yeah. And that made me so sad, too, when people would call and be like, I need a cake made. And they'd be, like, really shy about it and not sure what to say. And you finally catch up, like, a penis? And they'll be like, yes. do you do that kind of thing? And a lot of times, well, the few that I'd done, they'd be shocked. They'd be like, oh, you'll do it? I'd be like, yeah. They'd be like, everybody else has told me no. It's like, everybody else sucks. Of course we'll do it, man. Whatever.
No swastikas, no KKK symbols.
Literally, that was it. It was like, no hate. I don't want any hate, anything, nothing anti, anti anything that's not respectful for other people. But it was other like that, a dick cake.
We'll
like,
make you a
sure,
dick cake.
Of course I'll make you a dick cake. Like, Laura's made a couple ass cakes. I've got a video of her like rubbing those cheeks,
Yep.
But because you have to make sure it's all nice and smooth. But it looks like it looks so inappropriate. Like you're like groping a cake, and the boob ones are funny too because you're just your hands are just doing that. Wah, wah, wah. Anyway, so yeah, the adventures of that cake shop. But and then I wanted to tell one more Mormon story that involves Garrett, which is Laura's ex, because he grew up in the Mormon church. But like, I think scary parts of Utah or Nevada type of like backwoods Mormon, like the scary Mormons, where he said, because you can pray for dead ancestors, right?
Yeah.
That their souls go to heaven or whatever.
Baptize them into the church after they're dead. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Ancestor baptism is called.
But they use kids because they're like, oh, they're innocent. So they'll use kids as like, yeah, exactly. A surrogate to dunk them into the water to represent the dead relative. And like, apparently Garrett was like, and again, I hope he doesn't mind me telling this story, but like Garrett said that he was terrified that like the ghosts of all the people were like inside of him,
right?
That he was so scared. It was like, of course you'd think that if you were like
5 or 6 years
old.
Yeah.
Up till probably 12, I'd be like, dude, those dead people are fucking inside of me. I know it. So yeah, that was my Mormon. But, and not that you have like a murder story or anything, but you have had some pretty intense interactions with folks in Utah especially as a surveyor when you were a teenager. So start talking, my man.
So I worked several summers before I joined the Army as an assistant surveyor for the United States Geological Survey, working for the National Park Service, surveying campgrounds and various river usage sites, specifically in the Southwest. And one season we were in Utah, and we started in the Canyonlands. We worked our way around, but we stayed centered around Moab because that's where they were beginning to get a lot of tourist trade. They wanted to site some
Did you say what year it was?
Would have been 1985.
Okay, cool.
And Moab itself was a tiny, tiny town then. Nothing like what it... what it looks like today.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple thousand people, you know, when everybody came into town, it was red, it was dusty, didn't have a lot of amenities. And mm-hmm. me and another student volunteer were just hanging out in the parking lot of the gas station. It's just the gas station. It wasn't even a chain. And this ancient limousine pulls up. It's like probably from the 1940s. It looks like a station wagon, except instead of like two doors on each side, it's got five doors on each side.
Holy hell. That's a lot of doors.
A lot of doors. This thing pulls up and this joker jumps out of the driver's seat. You know, he pulls up the gas pump. This joker is dressed like he's from the 1840s.
Amazing.
He's got the black wool trousers. Now, mind you, it's about 105 degrees out.
Oh, no.
Black wool trousers, the white starch shirt, the hand and fore tie, the collar, the black wool jacket.
The hand and fore tie?
Yeah, it's the old timey, it looks like part lace, old timey necktie. Oh, yeah,
okay.
And not quite even a bow, not even as modern as a bow tie. And he's got I shit you not, an Abraham Lincoln stovepipe hat. We're like, is there like some local costume festival and stuff? And he gets out and he walks around the car and he opens up each one of the doors.
What the other fuck? Nine Do five doors. Tentacles come out?
No. Oh. Gals wearing 1840s, like full on chiffon dresses what that go all the way down to the ground.
Is they this got, Mormon prom?
No, because these were people from the age, I think, Ma or Grandma was about 60.
Never mind.
All the way down to about 12.
Oh.
And they all come out. I don't know what their relationship is to one another. I don't know if they're co-wives, co-sisters.
They're all
Grandma,
sisters.
Grandma, Mom, and the kids or what. But they all pile out of this ancient thing, this ancient limousine station wagon, call it what you will.
Mm-hmm.
And they all very carefully file into the gas station, one at a time, while Grandma's watching them, while the old guy wearing the stovepipe hat's gassing up the beast. And they go through and they're allowed to get one piece of candy a piece.
Are you watching this from the outside or
we're watching
now?
This from the outside.
Okay. How do you know? You can tell that they're just getting like one piece of candy.
They had windows and stuff.
Okay, I don't know how big the windows are. I'm not there. Really you're not looking, painting me a picture.
Watching them each get one piece, one piece of candy. And then, you know, while the man, the boss, whoever he is, grandpa is done gassing up, they all troop out back in 105 degree heat. And they each get in to a door and then Grandpa walks around, closes each door, and he gets in, and they drive away, and me and my friend are sitting here. Our jaws have been on the ground this entire time. Like, what are we watching?
I think you were watching a play rehearsal for Handmaid's Tale, I think. I think they were doing a local play.
And I had just read Margaret Atwood's book.
Oh, shit, because that was school reading,
that
right?
That was school reading where I went to school. And I'm like, it's Gilead. We're in Gilead.
Oh, fuck, man.
And then I'd explain the book to my buddy who hadn't read it.
Yeah.
But the Mormons always called their little slice of heaven there in Utah, Deseret.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe they should have called it Gilead instead.
Oh, my God. Oh, if only. But no. Sadly, no.
But our survey leader... We were doing a survey line up above Moab. I'm not going to say exactly where it is because it's probably still government land. He's like, we're going to run a survey transit through here, but you do not go on the other side of that ridge. And he points at that ridge. And I was like, well, why wouldn't we go on the other side of that ridge? He goes, anybody who goes on top of that ridge gets shot at.
Yep.
I'm like, seriously? I'm 16 years old. I don't believe any of this nonsense.
Or you know?
Going
to tell me that there was a man with a hook that scratched against the door.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So naturally, you know, that next morning, I get up early as a matter of fact, and it wasn't my turn to make breakfast, so I went up on that ridge. And I looked down.
Tell me what to do, motherfucker.
Nice wide valley. You got to understand the terrain of Utah is slip rock and scrub, and there's not tall trees really anywhere. It's all scrubby little juniper
it's
bushes.
It's beautiful, though. Like,
and
it's,
the rock colors, you know, the contrast of the white of the limestone, the red of the sandstone. At sunrise, it's beautiful, but after the sun shining – right in my face. I'm facing direct east.
Yeah.
And I look down the valley and there's some buildings down there. They look more like trailer houses and stuff that have been dragged out in the middle of buttfuck nowhere.
Yeah.
I can't see a road. They're just sitting out there. And I notice, like, there's bees somewhere around here.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of early in the morning for bees. It gets, even in the summertime, it gets chilly
yeah.
at night in the high desert.
Sure, sure.
And like, bees. What's up with the bees? And I'm looking
around. What made you think bees? Like, oh, you just felt that little buzz.
Just hearing buzzing kind of. And yeah. I'm looking around for it. And I happen to look down. This rock just disintegrates about 5 feet away from me. And I realize somebody's fucking shooting at me.
Yep.
And so I went back down the ridge a lot faster than I went up it. And my survey leader, you know, sees, he's like, I fucking told you they were going to fucking shoot at you.
Huh? No. I'm like, I wasn't warned.
They were shooting at me.
Bro, like, did you know that if you go up on this ridge, they shoot at you?
I have no idea who. I have no idea why. Luckily, they were fairly shitty shots. I mean, these are 800, 900 yards.
Do you know that they were shitty shots? Or do you think they were warning shots like that? If I go through this clip and he hasn't noticed, goodbye.
You know, it could have been. But, I mean, I estimate about an 850-yard shot. So somebody was shooting at me with something with a little bit of authority.
You think?
You know, they weren't popping at me with a .22 or Grandpa's shotgun.
John... Oh my God. And then is Utah the place, or was it Nevada, with the giant statue?
That's West Texas.
Oh shit, I'm sorry. Never mind.
We'll cover that in the Texas segment.
That's right. We'll have you come on special for that, cuz it's a pretty, you know, it's interesting at the very least, where you go, "What?" You know, one thing we forgot to talk about, or do you have any more Utah? Because I remember the being shot at. I forgot about the Abe Lincoln incident with I don't know, the...
Abe Lincoln and his nine...
Yeah, the Mary Lincolns coming out.
Yeah. Mary Todd Lincolns, yeah.
The Mary Todd Lincolns, by the way, oh, are playing no. at the fucking Black Sheep.
They fucking rock.
It is an all-girl punk rock band. The Mary Todd Lincolns.
Yes. Well, except for the drummer, and he wears that stovepipe hat.
Oh my God, I need this to be real.
How do you know it's not?
I mean, the Oakley Doakleys exist. So, yep. Although, did you see... Mark posted a very sad announcement that they're going to only have one more tour and then they're going to break up.
Oh, come on. I know.
Well, there weren't enough people supporting them. I mean, hey, to make it as a metal band that's not very well known, I mean, that cannot be easy. And well, you're all dressed as... And how long? You saw that bumper sticker 30 years ago, John. Yeah. Have you seen any more Dirt Nap stickers? I don't think so.
www.dirtnap.com.
The one I'm disappointed in, because when Lanessa was a teenager, it was her 18th birthday. Her and her friends are all rowdy, driving through LA, doing whatever the fuck. And this, like, apparently hot metal guy, and you know the song, this hot metal guy pulls up and is like... You know, he's like flirting with them. It's all a car full of cute girls in Southern California. And he goes, "Hey, do you guys like metal?" And they're like, "Yeah." So then he gives them their metal album. And I have, dude,
Chiselhead?
It's fucking Chiselhead. I have looked for this song, John, for fucking years. I cannot find it. It doesn't exist. If you have a Chiselhead album, both listeners, feel free to send it to, well, now I'm not giving anybody my address, but put it up on YouTube. But it was called like Shake That Booty. And it's this hard metal song, just guitar, percussion. It's just madness. It's like, you know, a
heavy group, metal.
Like if you gave preschoolers, you know, exactly. That's what it would make. And then in the middle, it just stops. And then it goes, swing that gigantic booty, oh, swing that gigantic booty, oh, swing that gigantic booty over here. Over here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then it just goes back into it. And that's the fucking song. Years, John, since I was in high school, I have tried to find this song. 18 fucking years. Nothing. It's brought up nothing. All of the 10 minutes of internet search I've put into it over the years has resulted in nothing. So, and what's funny is you've never even heard the song and you're a big fan.
I am.
You've never heard the song, that but you're be, like, no, I need this.
That would be my theme music. Anytime I'm cued to come on stage, they'd have to play that.
Oh, fuck. Well, so I've got on the bed, okay, because it is known that I am on the second book of Game of Thrones. I'm so fucking close, John. I have like 40 pages left. The last quarter of this book has taken me longer than it took to read the first three quarters. And it's such a good book, but it's just, dude, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. But I've got on the bed Neuromancer, because that's what I'm going to read.
William Gibson. 1982.
Yeah. So I'm excited about it. It's on like, I looked up on PBS, like they had NPR, they had like a top 100 sci-fi books to read, and that one was on it. So I was like, go me. But it says Neuromancer on it. And in my head, I keep seeing Necromancer. And the unfortunate thing every time I see Necromancer is Elton John comes in my head with Hold Me Closer, Necromancer. And I've said it during D&D when we've played it. And I'm not joking when I say every single time I hear the word Necromancer, Elton John instantly fucking plays in my head. For years, this has gone on, and I can't stop it.
And I don't hit her, boys and girls. I really don't.
I do it to myself. It's all the weed. But
routinely smoke marijuana cigarettes. <That's> Reefer.
Oh, I wish I could do the bong sound.
right.
Fuck, man. Something we did forget to talk about, though, was we saw Dune on Sunday. And it was great. I loved it. How about you?
I've seen all the theatrical versions of, film versions. Sure. There hasn't been a stage play yet, but just
was there anybody else besides David Lynch?
Sci-Fi Channel did a couple of miniseries. They did a miniseries in 2000, and then they did
Dune
Messiah. I mean,
for Sci-Fi Channel, was it good?
Let me put it to you this way. Every version of Dune that's been done, and I'm including the current one, has been an adaptation.
Yeah.
They just hit different marks.
Yeah.
What a bummer. I think that the current version of Dune really upped the cinematic game. I mean, David Lynch's version in 84 was extremely cheesy because they just did not have the state-of-the-art required. I mean, if your ornithopter's a gold box with fins on the side of it that just goes through the air with a wee sound, that's not the same experience as a modern 2021 special effects film where the ornithopter's wings flap and it looks like, God, that could be like a real funky kind of airplane looks like in the future.
It looks like a U.S. helicopter type. Like, except it looks it's like just it's owned got by wings
instead of rotors.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I have to say the costuming is fantastic. Cinematography was great. I think they made good choices in the actors they got to play the various roles. I know Jason Momoa is getting shit on a lot for a lot of people on the internet are pissed off. I think he did fantastic in his role as Duncan Idaho.
What are they
saying
he did bad?
I'll let you look it up yourself. Oh, okay. But they're just unhappy, and I think it's probably a little bit of, I don't know.
He's too dark for the role type?
Yeah.
A man named Duncan shouldn't have a tan?
I think that that might be a component, but maybe I'm reading I think he did a great job. I didn't have any problems with any of the acting.
I loved his character.
Did.
I thought he was great. Well, spoiler, heavy spoiler. I'm really sad that he died. You know, I wanted him to stick around because I thought he was so cool. And I'm going to guess
he comes back a couple of books later as a zombie.
Does he really?
He does.
Okay, well, big spoilers.
Big spoiler. This is a couple books down the line.
I am planning on, I do plan on reading it. You know, I'm going to read the Neuromancer thing, and then I might read another Christopher Moore just to like,
clean your palate.
Yeah, because I love sci-fi, but dude, it's some of those sci-fis are like really intense and it works my brain too hard where it's like I need to breathe.
Dune's got some stuff going on under the hood that you're just not going to catch with the movie, just like Game of Thrones. The film version of Game of Thrones doesn't cover nearly the amount of material that the printed copy does. You're going to find the same thing with Dune.
Exactly.
But you can enjoy both versions for their own merits.
Yeah, like little things that I thought the show actually did brilliantly of incorporating characters where they are not incorporated in the book, like at all, like Shay being Sansa's handmaiden, absolutely not happened in the book at all, you know, which is too bad because I loved the interaction between them. Arya was never Tywin's cupbearer at Harrenhal. That really bummed me out. It was like, damn, it was such a good, and it was so different in the book too, where it's like Arya helps a bunch of Northmen escape out of Harrenhal. They kill everybody at Harrenhal, and it's Roose Bolton. She ends up being Roose Bolton's cupbearer. You know, shit like that, where it's like, I would love to see another adaptation of Game of Thrones to see how much more they could add in or what different directions they would take it. Like, I think that would be spectacular.
The current version of Dune has frosted a lot of people because it changed the gender and skin color of some of the characters from what it ostensibly was.
So who else were they pissed about?
The Imperial Ecologist, Liet Kynes. That was a white... No, this is a gal.
Oh, wait.
In the movie, a black gal...
The chick that like helps him.
Yeah.
Well,
in the book, she's a white dude, ostensibly a white dude.
And people are pissed about that?
Some people get a little hacked off about that.
It's a character.
Absolutely no problem with any of the substitutions that were made. I think that they were pretty minor.
It felt natural. If it didn't feel natural, then I would have agreed.
It's 20,000 years in the future, people. Not just going to be white people.
And I will say, too, the only other thing, and I know you defended it, but I will say the names threw me off, where it's like Paul and Duncan. It felt sort of the same as, like, you know, the whole, like, Star Wars universe, where it's all these crazy names and species, and then it's like Luke, Leia. You know, it's like just these kind of boring vanilla names.
Herbert himself justified it in that he knew that the primary language spoken in the Imperium 20,000 years ago, nothing like English, but he wanted to give the people who come from that primary culture, as opposed to the Fremen or as opposed to some of the other cultures in the book, he wanted to stabilize that Galach language as English.
Yeah.
And so all the characters who are from that primary society have English sounding names.
Yeah.
That's how Frank Herbert himself, the guy that wrote the book, justified it. He felt that if he threw too many made up names in a made up language in his book, printed in 1965 by an auto manual publisher, it was just going to turn people off.
Yeah.
Different time, different era, different expectations.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, that was Dune review for us, at least. And then too, like, it's that first half, and I can't wait to see the second half, and I can't wait to read it. Like, I'm excited to see, like you said, the differences. I don't really care. I really enjoyed the movie. Like, it's on HBO Max until November 21st. So if you want to watch it again,
yeah,
you
got to do it by again. Then. I'm going to give it another whirl. Yeah,
'cause I think I'm going to watch it again too. It was beautiful.
You want to make a date?
Yeah, we should. We should like sit down and watch it one night.
I'm going to lay down, but
yeah, I will sit in the game chair. It's not really a game chair, but it's used as a game chair. It's nice and comfortable. Anyway, well, our dinner is about ready to be done. I need to saute up some Swiss chard with our Korean, whole chicken that I basically like described to Laura last time. It was I don't know if I said it on the potty. Anyway, it's like the Korean barbecue sauce. You mix oil, garlic, ginger, and you like put it all over the chicken, and then you mix potatoes and you bake it all together.
It's outstanding, y'all. It's really fucking
delicious. I hope it went. I kind of did extra, so the bird was bigger, and I had extra potatoes, and I'm not sure if I had enough sauce to keep it like really like moist. So we'll see. Anyways, all right, so we're going to sign off. Thank you, John, so much for stepping in for Laura. She appreciates that she's...
Oh, no worries. My pleasure.
Yeah, happy to be having dinner with her sister that she forgot about.
She forgot about her sister?
She forgot about her sister's dinner.
Oh, okay. Dinner.
She knows she has a sister. Anyway, all right.
Well, I didn't until I was 29, but...
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's another story for another time. John did find out. He had a half-sister that he learned about right before he turned 30. All right, anyway... Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye now.